Hello, Western Wisconsin. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross, and today we're going to talk with a writer of humor and organizer of Midwestern Stick to Your Ribs Home Cooking. We'll hear about commencing the 25th year of a very steady and active theater in the woods. We'll have a reunion with a movie and television star who built part of her artistic foundation on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. And a poet laureate publishes more. What else? Poetry. Today's guests in order of appearance are Holly Harden, Laurie Bockham, Lila Robbins, and Bruce Taylor, plus some Spectrum memos and what's on stage in West Wisconsin. I want to say Holly Harden is a breath of fresh air, but that's a cliche and denotes just a wisp of air. No, I'm talking a gust of fresh air. With very little fanfare and warning, she enters your mind through text that is smart, funny, and spontaneously insightful. If I hadn't seen a photograph of her, I might imagine her to be an older generation member. Due to the fact she writes like someone who's lived a lot longer, seen a lot more, and soaked in a lifetime of every kind of situation and individual. She writes for a Prairie Home Companion, edits other people's words, and her latest venture is a solo work called Good Food from Mrs. Sundberg's Kitchen. It's a cookbook, but it's also a recipe for flavorful reading, seasoned with a little bit of everything. She hails from around these Wisconsin parts, but somehow lost her way and now lives in Minnesota, hanging around where she continued her post-secondary education. Holly Harden answered her phone a while back, and I had a few questions. The view from Mrs. Sundberg's window. I want to just turn that around a bit and see if you can describe for me the view of Mrs. Sundberg's window. What does it look like?
Mrs. Sundberg is comfortable looking, and she's a little bit harried most of the time. Mm-hmm. But can compose herself pretty quickly. She wears aprons, mostly kind of plain tattered aprons, but she has a drawer full of them, and she looks well kept, but like she might have just come in from baling hay for an afternoon.
Oh, sure. So if we're looking at her looking out the window, is she happy? Is she listful? Is she dreaming? She's taking a break from cooking. She's looking out the window. Is she a happy lady?
Yeah, I think so. She's content. She has her moods, but she's content, and she's kind of wondering what's going to come along next.
Ah, but she's happy with her station in life.
I think so, yeah. She makes do, like a lot of people do, and she always has hope out there on her shoulder. Uh-huh. But yeah, she's not a temperamental person. She's easygoing. Wouldn't call her spontaneous, but she can be. And she always looks for kind of the best take on things, whatever it is.
But she's also on kind of an even keel because everything she talks about, that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. You have your choices. You can say that or you can look at the dark side of things, and there's really no point in doing that.
Yeah. Being a guy, I don't know much about Mr. Sundberg. What's he like?
Nobody does.
Yeah?
Well, he keeps to himself. He's an introvert. He likes his time alone. He spends a lot of time in the garage. He is a motivational speaker, so he's away a good part of the year, which, you know, she doesn't really have a problem with that. Sometimes when something goes wrong, and she tried to fix the furnace last year, and that didn't go so well. But, you know, with practical things, she likes having him around, and she likes him being around for conversation and just to be near. You know, when you call out someone's name and they answer, and you really don't want anything. You're just checking. She likes that kind of him being around. But she doesn't need him to be around, so she doesn't really dwell on his absence or his presence.
So she's practical. We've established that.
Yep.
Is she conservative, do you think?
With some things. I think she's conservative. She takes risks now and then, and she has a trampoline, which she gets carried away on occasionally.
Yeah. And she doesn't, you know, given the right circumstances, have a problem with cleaning the house naked.
Not at all, no. I mean, that's really how a house should be cleaned.
Sure.
But, she often will clean the house without any clothes on and then jump in the shower and clean the shower.
Well, sure.
And that's the last thing. And then she washes herself and then everything's done. There's a kind of finality to it that way.
When she gets out of the shower, she doesn't have a robe. Her husband has one, but she doesn't have one.
No, she doesn't have a robe. It's not really practical because what do you do with it? You only wear it for 7 minutes.
Yep.
And then what? And it's big and it's there.
Yep.
So she just got rid of it a while ago.
I've always thought that. That's why I don't like robes, never had one. And
no,
they don't make sense.
There's no point. But her towels are great. They're 100% cotton, solid, sturdy towels.
Well, they can't be too solid. I mean, I have to have a little thinness to my towels. Otherwise, you can't get your finger in your ear and stuff.
Well,
you know, people like thick towels.
You keep them for a long time, and you wash them so many times.
There you go.
That happens.
There you
inevitably.
Go. See, we're on the same page now. Now, we know that Mrs. Sundberg is busy in the kitchen because she likes to be. Is she always busy, period? Is she involved in a lot of other stuff or not?
Yes, she goes to a writing group occasionally. There's a group of women who meet at the local church. She doesn't like to have to be somewhere. And she'll go. If she has an appointment, she'll show up. She'll occasionally drop in on a women's group at the church and have coffee and talk. She goes to the library often. She spends several hours a week in the grocery store because that's where she runs into people she knows. She knows someone at every business in town. She'll go into, kind of like Norm on Cheers.
Sure.
She'll go into the gas station. She knows people there. And so a lot of her conversations and social interaction take place out and about.
I guess I don't know her first name. When you said Norm, I thought, do people say Eleanor or whatever her name is? What's her?
Well, nobody really knows her first name.
Oh, they don't. Okay.
There are very few things in life that are truly your own, and your name is one of them, and she doesn't really go by or answer to her first name.
Well, and I like that because there's a certain kind of formality. I mean, kids used to call their neighbors Mr. and Mrs., and I think there's nothing wrong with continuing that.
I don't think so either.
Good. How do you describe your relationship? Are you friends? Is she a mentor of yours? Are you?
She's a mentor. I look up to her. I take a lot of cues from her. She's older than I am by a few years, and she's kind of the person I would like to be.
Ah.
But I don't know that it's possible because everyone's different, and she has a good heart, and she's very forgiving and very positive, and I aspire to all of that because I tend to get into, you know, negative, maybe not so benevolent takes on things. She will just keep her chin up, and I admire that a lot. And she works so hard. I don't know. I don't want to go off on the whole technology and everything that makes things so easy, which is good. But the value of hard work, at least as far as I know, convenience has made things so much easier, and I admire how she's willing to work hard. She'll just get into it and get it cleaned up.
It's obvious you work hard, too. Holly Harden is on the phone with us. She has written the book in honor, I guess, of Mrs. Sundberg. It's called Good Food from Mrs. Sundberg's Kitchen. When certain people read this cookbook, Holly, they're going to be reminded of days gone by. When others do it, it's going to sound contemporary to them. I suppose it kind of depends on where you live, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I think people who grew up where I grew up, they won't think about it in those terms. I have several friends, older people, friends, who've read it, and then they start telling stories about when they were young.
Are these all Mrs. Sundberg's recipes, or where did they come from, or did you gather them?
I gathered them. She informed me as we worked on kind of sorting through what should be included and what shouldn't. The idea is that cooking should not be stressful for people. Well, there's cooking that's kind of an art form where, you know, and you invite any kind of stress that comes with that. But this is kind of basic comfort, good food cooking that isn't difficult.
Yeah.
If there's anything that isn't in someone's kitchen cupboard, it wouldn't be hard to find. But there aren't many recipes in here where you couldn't just open the book and throw it together.
Garrison Keillor, in his foreword for the book, appeared very ready for a book like this, almost as if to say it's about time.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound to me like Mrs. Sundberg gets out quite as much as Mr. Keillor does, maybe as widely, let's say. Was there a certain amount of frustration on her part, do you think, that was impetus to write this most basic of cookbooks?
I think so. For her, everything has purpose and meaning. In your home, if there's an object which isn't meaningful to you or isn't practical somehow, why is it there? And so she has all these recipes. You go to gatherings and you bring your hot dish and people say, could I have the recipe for this? And that's happened for both of us throughout time. Mm-hmm. And I think she thought, you know what, I'm going to put all these together. I think part of it is for her children, too, because they're older and they're moving on, and she wanted them to have this because sure. It's so much of who she is, the food she makes for them.
There's so many people nowadays, Holly, that are putting recipes into their iPhones and their iPads, and they're standing the iPad up on the counter. And geez, my imagination says Mrs. Sundberg just grabs food-stained 3x5 cards. Is that kind of the way it?
Yes. Yes.
Kind of the way it
they're
works?
They're worn out in an old wooden box.
Okay.
And she keeps them, and they're tattered, and occasionally she'll recopy one, mm-hmm. but I have recipes that were written by my grandmothers, and they're valuable to me.
You bet.
Because they're in their handwriting, and it's the same idea. It's very different. I mean, even to open a book, like a church cookbook,
yeah.
a cookbook that has meaning to you, to open it on the counter and read it and look at it is so different from setting your phone up with the recipe printed there.
I know. And I imagine Mrs. Sundberg has, and you mentioned your grandmother, handwriting like a nun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like a nun.
It's so legible and so proper and correct.
And elegant.
Elegant,
yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a kind of quaintness to it, or mm-hmm. no, maybe I want to say it's feminine, but there's just an elegance to it. Yep.
You can tell. I mean, mm-hmm. I've always been leery of men who have handwriting like a woman. Anyway, that's good. It's good, and I've steered away from that my whole life. As a matter of fact,
I haven't seen many recipes written by men actually in my life.
I have a bunch of cards that I use, and interestingly enough, they're all printed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father
you
was a.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
You should recopy those recipes in your own writing, handwriting.
Why?
Well, you said they're printed.
Meaning I print.
Hand-printed?
I print hand-printed, yes. I don't.
Oh, okay.
I don't, yeah. They're hand-printed with a pen or even better, a pencil. Man, that's recipes to me in handwriting of a grandma and in pencil. That's nirvana there.
Yeah.
I'm hoping, Holly, that you'll share one of those famous basic recipes with us. Will you do that?
Sure, I will. I've thought about what recipe is the best one to just share by telling someone. And
yeah.
My favorite recipe is cream corn casserole, and that's everywhere. It's in the cookbook, and it's the one I send out most. But the one I'm going to share today is something anybody could probably make right now. It just has three ingredients. It's a salsa dip.
Ah.
It's healthful, and it's probably my kids' favorite thing to snack on after school. All you need is a can of corn. And you drain the corn,
mm-hmm.
a can of black beans, which you also drain, and then a jar of your favorite salsa. And I prefer, this week anyway, Paul Newman's salsa with pineapple in it. You mix all three of those items together, and that's it. You can pour it on chicken that's been cooked. You can eat mm-hmm. it with chips, and it's good on salad, and it's very simple to make, and mm-hmm. it tastes good.
Now, in the book, the short author biography says you grew up in several small towns in Wisconsin. Now
I did.
Now you live in Minnesota. As one who may know, and not many people can put their finger on it, what's the basic difference between Wisconsin and Minnesota?
My first thought was beer.
Sure.
Of course. And I come from a family who enjoy drinking beer and eating cheese. And that's kind of where it's at when I go to Wisconsin. We have beer and cheese usually.
Yeah. Well, that makes it a landslide for me.
Yeah.
Because I live in Wisconsin. Holly Harden, thanks so much. Spectrum West is a better program now because you've been on it. I have pledged to make everything in that book. Everything
really?
In the cookbook. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful.
Well, because it's so basic, and I'm at that mm-hmm. stage of my life. I'm going back to basics. I'm going back to my Aunt Leona and my Aunt Flo, people who served me. Please tell me that there isn't any in this book Jell-O that has vegetables in it.
Oh, no, there's not.
You know, no. Jell-O with carrots and celery.
I've made those recipes, but, you know, no, not in this cookbook. I may include one in my next cookbook to kind of hold it up.
Yeah, in other words, hold it together, which is what that Jell-O was supposed to do anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Thanks for the time, and keep up the great work. We enjoy what you do, and let us know when you have a new book out. It'll be fun.
It'll be next spring sometime, the way it's looking.
And I'm looking forward to spring already, believe it or not. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
It's called Good Food from Mrs. Sundberg's Kitchen. That's Holly Harden. Her roots are here. She's blossoming in Minnesota, actually all over America. Great reading and good eating. Find it for yourself. It's fun. Actress Lila Robbins, Theater in the Woods, poet Bruce Taylor, all coming up on Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony. Music from Respighi and Tchaikovsky is featured at the 40th Anniversary Extravaganza October 11th at the State Theater. Details at 832-6366 or at cvsymphony.org.
Here's a Spectrum memo. This weekend, Saturday and Sunday, is the 11th annual Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour. Saturday from 10 to 6, Sunday from 10 to 5. 17 locations, 34 artists. FallingLeavesArtTour.com is the website. Well, it's the silver anniversary year for one of our many fine theater venues in western Wisconsin. Jim Oliver has that story.
Some 24 years ago, a group of people from Shell Lake and Spooner got together and formed a community theater group. On October 18th, there will be a gathering to launch the 25th season of Theater in the Woods. Joining us to talk about the life and times of Theater in the Woods is one of those founders, Lori Bockum. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you.
Well, tell us, what got you people together?
Well, there were a group of us that all had been involved in theater in some way in the past, high school or college or community theater, and we didn't really have anything like that in our area. We met on the lawn of the extension office for our first meeting. There were 10 to 12 of us, I don't remember exactly. And we just said, well, you know, let's choose a play. And we did, and we found a director, our first director, who was Carolyn Burnett. She had done a lot of theater, taught technical theater classes, and she consented to be our director. And we chose the play Fools, which is a Neil Simon play. One of our founding members, who's not in the area anymore, but Danny Bergman, he went door to door and collected some funds for us, so we had a little money to get started with. And the Palace Theater, which is the movie theater in Spooner, was willing to let us use their stage in front of their screen. There we were. We were on our way.
Now, how many productions did you have that first season?
That first season, we had two productions. We did Fools, which was our first production, and then we did A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
Ah. Well, now you do your productions, most of them at least, in the Erica Quam Memorial Theater. How did that come into play?
That was given to us. It's the old Methodist church in Shell Lake. Yeah, we had no real home. We had our stuff in an old mobile home for a while, and we would perform wherever we could find a place. And then, oh, and we debate this all the time, about 14 or 15 years ago, the Quams, Peter and Karen Quam, bought the old Methodist church, donated it to Theater in the Woods, and we named it in honor of their daughter, Erica, who had died and was very involved in theater.
Ah. Now, tell us a little bit about the Erica Quam, how much seating is there and that kind of thing.
We can seat 80 to 90 people. We have really turned it into a nice theater with raked seating, auditorium style, so that visually almost every seat in the house is a good one. And we have a stage that we can add on to, so we can do proscenium, we can do thrust stage. We've come out into the audience at different times. We've done dinner theater. It's a pretty versatile space.
Now, you talked about somebody going door-to-door in the beginning to pass the hat, basically, to raise money. How are you funded these days?
We're totally volunteer organization. We do get a grant every year from the Wisconsin Arts Board, and we have volunteers on our board who write that grant every year, and so we do get money from them. But most of our money comes either from donations from the community or from our admissions that we charge for our shows. You know, other than the Wisconsin Arts Board, we're self-funded.
She is Lori Bockum, who is one of the founders of Theater in the Woods in Shell Lake. The community theater group will be kicking off its 25th season on October 18th. Tell us about the 25th season.
The 25th season will start out with a show in December. It's called Those Crazy Ladies on the Corner. It's a Christmas show, and it'll be the first two weekends in December, directed by Roger Sweeney. These are the ones that I know for sure are in this season. Then in January, we'll do our youth review, which is called Shine. Young people from both Shell Lake and Spooner, and I think We've had Siren and Grantsburg kids involved in that, too, and I think kids from Hayward, maybe even some Rice Lake kids. We've had a lot of kids from the area involved in that. And then the first two weekends in March, we are going to do the musical Oliver. And then we're going to do Mama Drama in May. That will be, I believe, Mother's Day weekend. And then we will have a youth production again in June.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've had youth theater for quite a while, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, we actually did our very first youth production. It either was the beginning of the second season or the end of the first season.
You didn't mess
and
around
we
at
have
all.
Done one every year since.
That's great for the kids in the area.
Yeah, it is.
Now, you do not only theater at the QAM, you also have some musical programs there, don't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have a lot of different concerts. Mm-hmm. We've had Duck for the Oyster. In fact, Duck for the Oyster really was the kickoff show for our 25th season. They performed Labor Day weekend, a show here. We've had Claudia Schmidt and Phil Haywood, and many have come and done concerts at our theater.
Now, you said the original group came from Shell Lake and Spooner. Where do you attract actors and technical people and so forth?
We actually have had people come from all over the area, from Minong, Hayward, Webster, Grantsburg, Rice Lake, Cumberland, Birchwood, Webb Lake, Cable. We even had some people come from Cable. So we have a really wide-ranging group of people from all over the area.
Mm-hmm. I'm always curious about how technical people are developed. My experience in community theater is that it's almost more important to have qualified technical people than it is qualified actors to a degree. But do the technical people kind of learn on the job, or do people come in with strong technical backgrounds?
We've had both. Northern Wisconsin is amazing for the talent that comes out of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we have people that show up that have background in technical theater, you know, and then we'll have lots of volunteers that are just willing to say, I'm going to learn. And one of the coolest things, I think, about community theater is that you have to wear all the hats.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just be, like I say, I've done everything from direct the plays to clean the toilets.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of people can say that in all kinds of different community theater groups.
Yep, that's true. That's true. And so, you know, we learn from each other, basically. Yeah.
Well, you brought up the fact that people have technical backgrounds and other kinds of backgrounds. I was going to talk about your background a little bit. You said once upon a time that you had toyed with the idea of majoring in theater in college, but decided to go the amateur way. Why was that?
Well, partly it was because when I told my dad that I thought I would be a theater major, and he said, well, what would you do with that? And I said, well, I'd act. He laughed. He thought that was the funniest thing. So you don't eat very well when you're when you decide to be an actress. I don't know. I had other things that I decided to become a teacher instead.
Uh-huh.
And use theater as my avocation, and that's been fun, lots of fun.
Yeah. Well, in my experience, I've known some professional actors who got, you know, really tired of waiting on tables to make a living.
Right,
and
exactly.
So I think
that's so true.
And plus the fact that as an amateur community theater actor, you get to play all these wonderful roles that professional actors would kill for.
Oh, absolutely. So, absolutely. And you get to be involved, you know, in all aspects of theater. It just makes it so much more fun.
Yeah. So how does one find out about this pretty good party you're putting on?
I can give you all the information. We have a website, CITW.org, and you can look at our website. We also are on Facebook. You can find Theater in the Woods on Facebook, so both of those places. The pretty good party is October 18th with hors d'oeuvres and conversation at 7, and then we'll have a program probably about 7:45 or so, calling it 25 years and 25 minutes, give or take a few minutes. And it's open to anyone who would like to come and join us. But we need an RSVP. So if someone is interested in coming, there are two ways that they can RSVP. One is by calling 715-635-9500 or send an email to debshipman@hotmail.com. debshipman@hotmail.com. And if they would do that by October 10th, that would be great.
Okay. That sounds like a good time.
I think so, yes.
We've been visiting with Laurie Bockham, one of the founders of Theater in the Woods. The community theater group will be kicking off its 25th season on October 18th with a pretty good party at the Eric Aquam Memorial Theater in Shell Lake. Laurie Bockham, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Jim. This has been very fun. Thank you.
And thank you, Jim Oliver, as usual. Again, the Pretty Good Party is October 18th. The phone number for your reservation is 635-9500 or send an email to debshipman@hotmail.com. This is Spectrum West. So good of you to be with us. We're having a good time. Happy to be back. Her name is Lila Robbins. Yes, that Lila Robbins, the actor. Yeah, the one who's been a Hollywood and television regular for a number of years, with recognized and acclaimed roles to her credit, including a new starring role in the current Showtime hit series, Homeland. The new season premieres October 5th, by the way. And although we talk to the fairly famous now and again here on Spectrum West, why might Lila Robbins be featured? Well, she's a UW Eau Claire alum, having graduated with a music degree. And it's there that we began our recent conversation.
I was playing the piano. When I was in high school, I'd done some musicals and plays, but my focus kind of changed to music for a while because I wanted to be Joni Mitchell, basically. And so I had a piano scholarship, and I studied with a wonderful teacher, Penelope Cicchini. And then you had to have a secondary instrument, so I studied voice. But I kept sort of sneaking down to the theater department because I didn't like being alone practicing. And I got very involved in the theater department there under Will Denson and sort of switched my focus, although I finished with a music degree because I had so many credits. I just decided to finish that way.
Cool.
And have a theater minor. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've been down so many roads since UW Eau Claire. Obviously, you've named some names. You have clear memories of those days.
I do, but I've also maintained friendships with people in town. At least once a year, I go into Eau Claire and I see my friends, and we have a little dinner together with my teacher, Penelope Cicchini.
Wow.
And with Will Denson and his wife, Judy. It's sort of kind of a regular thing for us.
Wow.
Over the years. So I've maintained my friendships there. Yeah.
So you have your own personal class reunion.
I do. And I usually start the day by going over to the joint. There's a chair next to the bar, which I believe is either a barber's chair or a dental chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit in it, and I have a few lineys just to start my visit.
You know, and this is kind of cosmic, but it must have been tied to the preparation for this interview because I was about seven stools to the left of that chair last night.
Were you really?
I was, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
The Yale School of Drama. Tell me about the notch to which that lifted you.
Well, you know, after finishing Eau Claire, I thought I would still need some more training in the acting department here. I want to go further. And actually, David White helped me prepare my audition. Actually, I was pursuing a Fulbright, and I made a tape of my acting for the Fulbright, and I got it, but I was put on a waiting list for one of the schools in London that I wanted to go to. And then in the meantime, somebody on that Fulbright committee was the dean of the drama school at Yale, and he said, well, you're going to be an American actress. You should study in America.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Yale, and that helped me a lot because I actually met the undergraduate acting teacher there, Nikos Sakharopoulos, who then cast me at Williamstown Theater Festival, which was a place on Williams College campus that employed a lot of so-called stars, I guess. And I got to go there as an ingenue, and one of my first plays was with Christopher Reeve.
Wow.
And my next play was with Diane Wiest and Christopher Walken. So that was a real boost for my career. That's how I found my agent. She was singing at a cabaret of an evening at Williamstown, and somebody said, oh, be good tonight. And as it turned out, Sam Cohen was in the audience.
Oh, wow.
The main agent at ICM. He was Meryl Streep's agent, and he was out there, and saw me, and we started to have a conversation about him representing me. That's how that happened, yeah.
Great story. On the telephone with Lila Robbins. She's an actress. She is UW Eau Claire alumna. She's an 81 music grad, by the way, and has done a lot of things since. So now you've landed what might be an overriding role for your career, but, you know, everybody likes to hear about paying dues. You've alluded to a few of them, getting up at a cabaret and singing. I suppose is like that. For the experience necessary to become the U.S. ambassador to Pakistan in an award-winning series like Homeland, you know, you do have to pay some dues. Tell our audience about the kinds of dues you paid early, the ones, you know, whose memories are best to keep. You got to keep those just for perspective.
Yeah, well, you know what? I guess I've never looked at them as paying dues. I've always looked at them as just opportunities to learn how to be a better actress. And, you know, in some ways, fate sort of plays out. I mean, I got, because I didn't get a lot of film and television initially, I was able to do a lot of great classical roles in a lot of the great theaters across the country, including the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis, which I've done four plays there. I mean, my real love is language, and so I'm very interested in the classical plays and the kind of things that they explore and the symbolism. I really love the theater the most, but once in a while, one has to also pay the bills, so to speak.
Sure.
And I did have a great opportunity back in 1991 doing a TV series with James Earl Jones, which was wonderful. And I love doing film and television. I just seem to get more offers in the theater world. Paying the dues. Yeah, you know, I've always sort of thought that every role that was given to me for a reason, to expand some part of my repertoire or help me work on something in my technique. I know a lot of young people today want to sort of become famous or make it, so to speak, and I've always wanted to do good work and work with good people, but my goal has never been to be famous. My goal has been to be a good actress and to be as good as I can possibly be. And I've had a lot of chances to work with great people, which can only make you better because you're just learning all the time when you're working with great people.
Well, from some of the reviews I've read, I think you've succeeded.
Way to go. Thanks.
Cool for you.
You haven't read the other ones, obviously. there have been some pretty bad ones, too.
That was one of my questions that had to do about how you file reviews, because, as I said, I've read some very good ones, but those in the long run can be harmful, too, if you let them go to your head. I mean,
absolutely. In fact, I have a rule that I don't read them until the show closes, because if somebody mentions something that you did, oh, the way she picked up that teacup, blah, 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 and then makes you self-conscious of that moment, and the last thing you want to be is self-conscious when you're acting. So to be aware of something is not always a great thing. But, yeah, there have been some really bad reviews, but my mother, who's the kind of the archivist, we save the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it's just fun to look back in the scrapbook and see some of the horrendous things that have been said about me and then some of the really nice things. So you realize it's all subjective in the end. And you got to take the good with the bad and learn from the bad. I mean, I do pay attention to them, and I see if there's something in there that maybe I can learn about. But it's fun, and it is certainly one person's opinion. And I think, as you know, as you go to the theater, sometimes people hate something, and you'll love it, or vice versa. Kind of take it all in stride.
Well, I'm guessing that there's probably more than one scrapbook.
There are a lot, and I'm really grateful to my mother for having kept track of all that. And there were years where she has hounded me to get the reviews, please get the pictures and do this. And I'm really so glad because, you know, it triggers my memory to see a picture and go, oh, my God, I remember that. And to look back, especially on some of the shows we did in Eau Claire, it was so fun, you know, that I look back on. You know, Gary Griffin is quite a successful alumnus of Eau Claire. He is one of the artistic directors of Chicago Shakespeare. And every time I meet people, I'm like, yeah, when we did West Side Story, I was Anita and he was a Jeff.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, and look at him now. He's doing very, very well.
Well, the longer I do this program, the more I trip over people nationwide who are either theater or music or art grads from Eau Claire. It has a pretty impressive system of people who have been through.
Does.
Well, hey, you know, there was a time that we were poised to record our conversation via Skype or some other space deflected signal. Because you've been in South Africa for, as I said earlier, the Homeland series. Are you on a break or has it wrapped or what?
We're on a hiatus, which I wasn't aware that we were going to have. So it's very nice to come home after 2.5 months. I'm technically shooting 7 out of 12 episodes. So there are times I'm working and times I'm not. But the free time I've had in South Africa is amazing. It's such a beautiful place. It's really stunning. The nature, oh my God, the mountains, the sea, the vineyards. And I've really enjoyed my time there. And it's such a great show to be a part of. I mean, the writing is so great, and the actors are amazing, and I just feel really, really blessed to be a part of it. It's really a gift. It's been a really wonderful gift for me. But it's also been great to come home and just sort of touch base for a moment. I go back for 2.5 more months. I go there till the November 22nd.
What kind of special preparation have you undertaken to assume the role of an ambassador?
Well, there were some books that the lead producer-writer Alex Ganza suggested, a book called No Exit from Pakistan. Really gets into the, how complicated the situation is over there. I mean, it's politically incredibly complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to wrap my head around it, obviously, to play this role. I don't have to be an expert, you know. As people who play doctors on television don't actually have to be doctors, I guess I don't really have to be an ambassador, but it's nice to know some things about doing that, and I had some communication with an ambassador, a Latvian ambassador that I was connected to, and sort of just wrote to her and asked her about, like, what is her day like, her normal day? What are the things that you've got to do in a day? And they're incredibly busy people, you know, they're working in the office all day, and then at night they're sort of entertaining dignitaries and doing this dinner and that dinner. So it's a pretty much 24/7 type of job. So I really wanted to kind of know just the basic sort of day-to-day stuff so that I would know what my life is as that person. And then we've got a big, big scene coming up where it's a diplomatic scene. So I guess that'll be fun.
Oh, wow.
And we do. They're also developing my private life in the show. They've given me a husband, and there's some complications there. So... And do it all. It's really a wonderful character because I'm kind of a high-powered professional woman, but I'm also a mother and a wife.
It's not all posture and business suits, then.
Exactly, exactly. Which sometimes when you get on maybe a show that's about lawyers or something, you end up spewing a lot of legalese, and you're sort of longing for the more, I don't know, domestic human part of things.
Right now in your career, I think we can probably safely and kindly say that you are past the starlet stage. Yeah?
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Well, if you had to come up with a name for the chapter you're in your acting career, what might that be?
That's an interesting question, and there's many different answers to that. I feel I wouldn't know how to put it into a word.
Yeah, a definition's fine, too.
I'm not the dowager yet, I hope.
No, you're not there.
You know what? It's an interesting thing. It's kind of a confluence of things. I feel like all the work that I've done on the stage and all the film and television I've done along the way, I feel like everything's coming together on this role because I feel very relaxed. I feel very confident. I feel like I know what I'm doing. I feel very at ease with this role, and I feel... that there's always sort of been a part of me that's been an old soul, and that finally my age and the role, who I get to be and what I get to bring to it is all sort of coming together in a really wonderful, relaxed way. And part of acting is relaxation. And so I feel that it's as it should be, and I feel really, really happy and blessed. And the only unfortunate thing is that my father passed away this last year. I wish he could have seen that, but I think in many ways he is.
Compliments on what has been and continues to be a noteworthy acting career. Wisconsin is happy to have been part of where you came from.
And... oh, gosh, I have such great memories, and I loved spending my time there and my earliest days there, and it was such a wonderfully nurturing place to be, you know. Such smart professors, and yet not too big a place where you get lost. So it kind of had the talent, but also the personal approach I think I particularly needed at that time. I'm just grateful to have grown up in Minneapolis and also spent time in Wisconsin, and the fact that I've remained friends with people there is just a joy and a wonderful thing that I look forward to every year.
Thank you so much for sharing some time with us.
Okay, thanks so much.
That's Lila Robbins, personable and centered, allowing Midwestern common sense and role models to help her through the maze of big-time showbiz. Again, Homeland, the new season premieres Sunday on Showtime. And if you've been known to absorb one now and again in Eau Claire, you just may end up having a beer next to her someday.
Support for WPR comes from Visit Winona, home of the Minnesota Marine Art Museum, with special collections including Picasso, Matisse, Van Gogh, Monet, Renoir, O'Keeffe, Sargent, and Homer. It's the year to discover Winona. Visit Winona.com.
Fly me to the moon. It's where we feel like we are sometimes here on Spectrum West. It's so much fun to do. Hey, I see that a panel discussion, The Role of News in the Community, is coming up at UW River Falls at 7 p.m. Tuesday in the Riverview Ballroom at the University Center. Participants in the panel discussion include our own Rich Kramer, reporter and host of The West Side, here on Wisconsin Public Radio. So take that in if you can. I guess they say that you should contact the UWRF Journalism Department if you'd like to learn more about that. This is also the weekend of the 16th annual Fresh Art Fall Tour, Friday through Sunday in Pepin and Pierce Counties, 15 sites. Everything you need is at freshart.org. Wednesday, October 8th, the Heide Center presents It's a Wrap, Silk Painting, Art to Wear. A lot of fun with one of the most beautiful textiles available. Details by phone at 726-9000 or online at cvca.net. Spectrum West, I'm Al Ross. Nice of you to be with us. Bruce Taylor's written another volume of verse. This one's called In Other Words. The retired university professor and current Eau Claire poet laureate is a prolific reader and turns things around to become just as bountiful a writer. To me, most poets simply get to a point where they have enough verses to publish it, and they do it. But this, to me, feels like a project. Was this a project for you?
Yes and no. I conceived of it a little while ago when I realized that a lot of the poems that I had been writing all had this one thing in common. They were what we call palimpsests. And a palimpsest is like when people used to write on wax tablets or on parchment. You know, it was very rare and hard to get. So they would write something, then scrape it off, then write over it. The best image I think that works for this, remember the magic slate with the gray film and the black backroom? You write on it, lift it up, goes away, but it's still there. It's still there.
Yeah.
So a palimpsest is text, words that are based on other words, okay? Once I started thinking about that, I realized I had many, many of these kinds of poems. I have a poem that's based on guest notebooks I found in a cabin up in Lake Superior. I have another one that's based on a lecture that a preacher gave in the 19th century on the American apple. And in this book, each section, there's five sections, each one is based on not just one text, but sort of a body of text. There's one, the first section is based on garden writing in general. Mm-hmm. You know, I went crazy when I got my first garden and started to read everything I could because it's easier to sit down and read than it is to garden.
Yes, you know? It is. It's cleaner, too.
The second one was based on, I was introduced to the writings a number of years ago of Thomas Merton, who is just a remarkable, remarkable man. And that got me reading more Christian mystics. And then that got me reading about monastery life. I was fascinated about what goes on there.
Wow.
You know, because you have a bunch of holy men, but they're still men.
Yes.
And they have to live closely together. They have to get along. They have to work. Other sections on this one is called Flight, and it's based on the notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci.
Mm-hmm.
And the process for all of these is pretty much the same. I read, and I always read with my journal next to me in a pen. And I take down quotes, phrases, things I think about. One of my favorite things to do is to sort of misread, you know. I look at a phrase, and then by the time it gets in my journal, it's changed somehow a little bit.
Okay.
So I wait till I get a massive amount of the stuff, then I start messing with it. I mix it up. I, you know, just play with it until Michelangelo said, till the angel steps forth from the stone. That's giving myself too much credit.
Yeah.
Rodin said one time, someone said, how do you make a sculpture, say, of a dog? And he said, well, you take this big block of stone and then you knock away anything that ain't dog.
That's a good thing.
This mass of material that I have, poems begin to emerge. They sort of step out. They come forth.
I always thought I was well-versed, but this palimpsest is, if some instructor throughout the years told me about this word, I apologize because I've totally
forgotten about it. Oh, no, it doesn't come up in daily conversation.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
Very much. But the magic slate, however, will.
Yes, oh.
Because we've all used it.
So you've kind of answered my question about writing about a theme. Do you often write about themes when you...
I don't know that it's a theme, but the one thing that all these poems have in common, no matter where they...
You have five themes within this book.
Well,
basically,
no. There's five sources.
Sources, okay.
Sources, each subject,
wrong word.
Section comes from a source. If there's a theme or something that they share in common, it would be, you know, how we have to... I think humans have a need to move with something larger than them, something...
Sure.
More long-lasting, something, you know, for want of a better word, the divine or a divine. And that's the thing that all these sections have is a longing to and a wrestling to get to that larger thing.
Bruce Taylor's with us, UW Eau Claire Professor Emeritus and Eau Claire Poet Laureate. The book is called In Other Words. It's fresh off the presses. Are there particular challenges about doing this palimpsest procedure?
Yeah, I think you have to get over worrying. Am I stealing something here? Am I taking something that I shouldn't be? And indeed, in these poems, there may be buried a 3 or 4 word phrase that is exactly mm-hmm, from mm-hmm, one mm-hmm. source, one of the many sources. But you have to get over that and realize you're creating this thing yourself for messing with it, mixing all this stuff up. And then I also add, as in the garden poems, I also add my personal experience in gardening and mm-hmm. in the I guess I add my personal experience all the way through this, except maybe flight. I have not flown by flapping my arms.
No.
I haven't even tried to.
In your dreams you have, I'll bet. Yeah. Just like a person would when they're looking at a cookbook, it's time to sample something. The first one you're going to read is apropos because it says Autumn Garden in it.
Well, the section is called From Taylor's Encyclopedia of Gardening, and that's not just a massive ego trip on my part.
No.
There is a Taylor's Encyclopedia of Gardening, came mm-hmm. out in 1936. And when I first started gardening, I went to the used bookstore and found this thing. That led me to reading, you know, everything that Catherine White's stuff, columns from old newspapers, poems about gardening. And as I said, I messed them all up. And the other reason I did it that way is because it has that authority. It's like this is an encyclopedia. This
sure.
is not just me saying
okay,
something.
Right.
So each poem begins with a quote supposedly from the encyclopedia. Some of them are. Some of them are from somewhere else, and some of them I just made up.
So the first line you're going to give us is from that book.
Yeah, it is purportedly a quote. Wherever one gardens, there is heartbreak. Working in autumn garden, it's not hard to think about dying when the thinnest, most delicate of ices linger all morning here and there in the yellow grasses. The sun on our back throws what is before us into sharp relief. Snapdragon wither from stem to bud, and dahlia from ruin blossom down. Fruits, leathery pods, nuts and berries, a blizzard of seed blights, rusts, and smuts. The dry husk of the day, like a fire going out from its center, burning clear at last.
Very nice. That's from your garden section.
One of the reasons I like that poem is I've been writing for 50 years now. It's the first time I've got to use the word smuts
yes.
in a poem. It just doesn't
I
come
noticed
up very
that
much.
When you got to it. Yeah. Let's just dive into one more, and then we'll chat and then have a finale.
Okay. This one is called Sighting a Tree, deciding where to put the tree in. And even many years ago when I planted a tree, I thought, wow, you know, you're planting a tree.
Well, it's like using a permanent marker. You
yeah.
plant a tree.
Yeah. It's there.
You better be happy
doing crosswords.
You don't want to keep digging it up.
Right. Yeah. So this is called Sighting a Tree. The basic labor of an act of faith, begun with patience and prophecies of water, wind, and light. The earth turning darkly beneath you into something so high, so unlikely, and full of bird and bird song. Some deep foreshadowing of some spring yet to be, in which to sit not complacently in the sunny stretch of youth and expectancy, but in the cool repose of one damn thing you did when you meant to so many years ago.
And there you got to use the word damn. That's
yeah.
good. That's
other places I lived, I still visit the trees I planted there. But once a year I drive by, see how they're doing.
Cool. Like old friends.
Yeah.
Do you look for something that fits who you are, or is it carte blanche for you?
I always talk about writing for me. It's sort of like a surfer waiting for a wave. You're out there sitting on the wave
yes.
and waiting for it
yep.
and waiting for it. And mm-hmm. it may come and it may not. And when it comes, it takes you with it. Some poems are just given. I have to absolutely write them. Some of them I sort of struggle towards.
Where can we get your new book?
Volume 1 store, downtown,
okay. right.
Crossroads. Then online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, along with all the rest of them. Also available on Kindle.
It's called In Other Words. Let's exit with one final bit of verse.
While it caters to our conceit to assume that flowers were created for our enjoyment, their true function is far more important. Bright bee flowers on a balmy day, white odor of moth flowers in the gray evening cast, darker beetle flowers low to the ground and reeking of dung and meat, lither wind flowers reaching with perfume and pattern to all points of their compass, to the uglier bugs and a few of the smaller birds and the briefer butterflies, which the naive still believe are the souls of flowers fluttering in the easy breezes of desire.
Bruce Taylor, thanks so much for being with us again. Fun to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of Young Frankenstein will play through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Sideways Stories from Wayside School, a production of the Eau Claire Children's Theater, will play Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. The Festival Theater of St. Croix Falls will present The Miser tonight, Thursday, through Sunday. The play will run weekends through October 26th. The Spell of Sleeping Beauty will be performed by the Phipps Children's Theater Friday through Sunday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The show will play through October 12th. The Mystery Cafe production of Murder, She Tweeted will play Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The show will play Fridays and Saturdays through November 1st. The River Falls Community Theater will present The Dixie Swim Club Friday and Saturday at the River Falls Public Library. The Barron Spotlighters production of Dear Ruth will run through Sunday at the Barron Area Community Center. Auditions for the Phipps Children's Theater intergenerational production of Bah Humbug, Scrooge's Christmas Carol, will be held on Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake will hold auditions for the Best Little Christmas Pageant Ever from 6 to 8 p.m. tonight, Thursday, and from 10 till noon on Saturday. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Next week, the move is on to raise money to help the dream of the Confluence Project come true in Eau Claire. We'll talk with a man who's coordinating the effort. The near north side of Eau Claire has an interesting past. We'll tell you how interesting. The Chippewa Valley Symphony and the Master Singers open new seasons. And more, always more. Here's some of what we're working on for coming weeks. Blues man Corky Siegel. Wow. The Power of Solar Energy, a nursing home for Great Danes. And as I said previously, more, always more. Thanks, Lauren Segrin, Tiffany Coggins, Dean Kallenbach, and all who make Spectrum West a weekly possibility. We have fun. Hope you do, too. I'm Al Ross. It's a wrap. We'll see you next week.